We are dream chasers.
And if you're motivated by the fear of being average,
then welcome home. This is the Plan of Action Podcast. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Plan of Action Podcast.
Welcome back, everyone.
This is going to be episode 4, yes. 5 love languages.
Yes. I'm really excited about this one. I think a lot of people are going to be able to learn a lot from this and benefit from this, especially if you guys are in a committed relationship or if you guys are single and you're looking for someone and you want to know exactly what to look for.
Absolutely. This is going to be a tremendous benefit. If you take the skills that we are going to lay out today, and you will actually practically apply those to any relationship you find yourself in, whether it's, we're going to target this towards couples, whether dating, especially married couples. Later on, you know, when we're kind of doing the conclusion of this and wrapping it up, we'll tell you a little more about, you know, children's, teens, singles, things like that for any parents out there that has young children in the house or anyone that's single. Now, the heart of this lesson that we're going to go over today, the 5 love languages, is pulled from the book called The 5 Love Languages, The Secret to Love That Lasts. It's by Dr. Gary Chapman. I've heard this recommended across various podcasts. So we went ahead and we read the book. It did not take very long to read at all.
We actually read it together, which I would highly recommend if you are married or in a committed relationship, I would read it with your spouse.
Absolutely. It makes it a lot more immersive for both of you to talk about it on the spot together. Mm-hmm. You kind of see how your spouse reacts or your significant other reacts. And, you know, every now and again, it'll call you out and you're going to know it's going to call you out because you're going to shoot that look at your spouse and they're going to look at you and be like, yeah, that's you. That's you. You better read that one.
And it also, at the end of the chapters, also has like a little work area that's really meant for you and your spouse, which I really like because at the end of the chapters, it gives you that second to reflect on what you've learned, if you've learned something. So I like that about it as well.
Absolutely. It reads kind of like a Bible study where at the end of the Bible study, it gives you that period of reflection and it has like one little conclusion at the end. And it has it poses a question for you guys to talk about. That's why we say it's very important that you guys read this book together. And at the very end, you ask that same question for both of you. And you answer, you respond, you communicate, you talk about it, opens up that line of communication. And then it has like little tips and tricks at the end, about 5 to 10, depending on the specific love language. So if any of you guys are new to this podcast, I know we said this is episode 4. I'm Cody and my wife, Abby, Cody and Abby Taylor. We run this podcast. We're a dual military couple. The entire aspect or the entire plan, goal of the Plan of Action Podcast is to make you, whether that's you as a man, you as a woman, you as a married couple, it does not matter. It's to make you more physically, emotionally, mentally, and spiritually present in your life to help you overcome fears, to overcome those goals. Maybe one of the things that's struggling for you right now is maybe your physical, your mental, your emotional relationship within your marriage. And that is what we are going to be guiding you in today with the 5 love languages. With that being said, if there's any men listening out here, and as soon as you saw this title, you're like, oh, there's no way I'm going to study the 5 love languages. Dude, pull your head out of your ass, because I said the same thing at first. And then when I start reading it, this stuff is so incredibly powerful that it's not anything to joke about. It's not anything to try to act like you're more manlier than this, because there's nothing more manly than loving your wife effectively. Because if you don't love your life effectively, you're going to wind up being a single man. So I challenge you to be an actual man and challenge yourself and read this book and apply it to your life. You are going to see your marriage blossom.
Yeah, definitely. One thing I would like to say too is Dr. Chapman, this isn't the only book he has. He's got books specifically for teenagers, specifically for men, specifically for women. If you're a military couple, he also has a book specifically for that. And also, you can go to his website. It is 5lovelanguages.com. And you can actually take a, I think it was like a 10, 15 question quiz to find out what your love language is. And I promise you, once you take that quiz, it'll really put a lot of
perspective
into your life, especially if you are married.
Absolutely. One more time, that website is 5lovelanguages.com, and that is the number 5, not the letter 5, or yeah, not the word 5. So 5lovelanguages.com. So I think we should go ahead and get into it and start introducing the 5 love languages.
Yeah. So what are the 5 love languages? First, I think you should introduce yours, and then we'll go ahead and start with mine, and then we can kind of jump back and forth between each one.
Okay, I'm going to start with listing the first 5, and then we'll get into our specific love language. So just so the audience listening, the 5 love languages that we're going to be working with is words of affirmation, quality time, receiving gifts, acts of service, and physical touch. So my personal love language is physical touch.
And my personal love language is acts of service. Two polar opposites, and I feel like Cody and I differ drastically, but I think after reading this, it has just made our marriage that much better. It has stronger. Stronger. It has put, including, you know, adding God into our life, it has just really has come full circle in the past couple of months.
It really has. So if you're in a place in your marriage, your relationship right now, if you're dating, we'll talk about the puppy love thing where everything's sunshines and rainbows and everything like that. It's not going to stay that way. Sorry. Yeah. It's just not. Marriage is a whole nother step. It's a whole nother level. Dating has nothing on marriage. I'm sorry. But if you are in a specific point of time in your relationship where, and this, there's a lot of people who run into this issue when you are dating. So if you can't get it right while you're dating, well, you better get it right before you pose that question, because you got to get this thing on the right track leading into marriage. And if you are married and there's a communication breakdown between the both of you, if you guys are fighting about the same things all the time, if you're sick of your wife nagging 24/7 and you say the same thing to her, I wish you'd have dinner on the table when I get home. And she's always saying, I wish you'd just mow the lawn. You guys are having these fights back and forth. It gets nowhere. All you do is get bitter. Hatred grows in your relationship. You start looking for other outlets and things like that. That is absolutely not the answer. And reading this book, The 5 Love Languages, will benefit you wholeheartedly, because it's going to get you to better understand the way that you both communicate from a very intimate level.
Yeah, I think a good point that was made in the book is he explains kind of how a way that I feel loved is a way that Cody might not feel it. Mm-hmm. So that's where it kind of differs. So like, say I maybe take out the trash for him, but for him, his love language is physical touch. So he might not feel the same sense of love that I think that I'm giving him, because all he really wants is a hug or a kiss, you know, or just to be laid next to in bed. For me, I personally get really stressed out with things around the house. So I feel loved when he helps me clean the house or helps do the laundry or helps make dinner. That really makes me feel like he's thinking about me, because he's doing something he doesn't want to do, so I don't have to do it.
Absolutely. And the thing is that the way that our minds often work, and we can change the way that our minds work, but the way that our minds naturally work, they're hardwired one type of way. And it takes us a lot of effort and self-discipline to start moving towards another train of thought. A good way to think about this is they're called the 5 love languages. So take my physical touch. Pretend physical touch for me is Russian. And Abby, acts of service is French, and receiving gifts is English, and quality time is Chinese. So if I'm speaking physical touch, or I'm speaking Russian, and she's speaking acts of service, or she's speaking French, we can never fully understand each other. We can never communicate effectively. Mm-hmm. There's an absolute communication breakdown, because if I don't know French and she doesn't know Russian, I don't know acts of service, she doesn't know physical touch, how are we supposed to meet in the middle and have effective communication? You can't.
Yeah.
So further from that, each love language, just like a real language, has different dialects. If we talk about the English language and we want to talk about dialects, well, people from Texas sound way different than people from New Jersey. So even though you can understand it, there's still a little bit of issues in the communication there. So it goes into things like that. So as we talk about these love languages, I want you to think of them as actual human languages. And when we begin talking about dialects a little later on, I want you to think about that as specific regions or areas of that country that speak things a little bit differently than others. So with that being said, back to me and Abby with physical touch, for me, and for me personally, the physical touch is non-sexual physical touch. So it's holding hands, or, you know, her giving me a head massage, something real simple. Just a hug, a kiss, any type of physical, little tiny physical touch that lets me know that she cares. For her, that is just a normal thing. It doesn't really, you know, of course, everyone wants a little bit of the five love languages, but they don't mean the same thing. So for me, that one hug can get me through my entire day, whereas Abby could get through her day with or without the hug. It's not that big of a deal. And the same thing to be said with acts of service. When I make dinner, then that means the world to Abby. But when she makes dinner, it's just typical Tuesday in my house. Not that I'm a traditionalist or I think that a woman's place is in the kitchen. Although I will say, when we first got married, I had a very traditionalist view of marriage based on my grandparents, because my grandma was a 1950s housewife. I thought that the man did all the work and the woman did all the housework.
Yeah.
And I actually carried that into the relationship at the very beginning.
We both learned very quickly that that was not how it was going to go. I'm very much a busybody. I like to work. I like to be outside of the house doing stuff that I love, chasing goals, which he wanted for me. But I think when he first entered into our, you know, relationship, he just had a completely different view from what he was used to, which is totally fine. But it's how you grow from that, how you can change that. You know, you got to be able, the whole point of the five love languages and knowing your love languages is that you can grow with them. So you can learn with them. You can change. Like, okay, if I'm not doing something that you don't like, or if I'm doing something you do like, I need to continue that or not continue that. I need to change that. There's a moment in the book that says you choose to love someone every day. You choose to do that. You don't have to. So if I am choosing to love him, I am choosing to do all these things for him, and vice versa. So you need to remember that when, you know, if you ever read the five love languages, or if you ever, you know, decide to take the quiz or learn more about each other, just remember that you have to choose to do those things, and you have to be willing to do those things for this to work.
Absolutely. So with that being said, if I would have maintained my traditionalist marriage point of view and never became adaptable to Abby's situations, well, we probably wouldn't be having this podcast together right now. By this point in time, we would have never got married, or we would have divorced, or you know, what have you. But the important thing is that these types of issues are going to come up. Each person is uniquely different, and they bring something different to the table. Their personalities are completely different. So once you get past that puppy love stage where you think that the other person is just the most perfect angel in the world, there could be nothing wrong with them, that only lasts a certain amount of time on average. That will fade. That will absolutely fade. And when that fades, what are you left with? Nothing but confrontation and lack of communication, and there's never any understanding. So it is important that you begin honing those love languages so that you become adaptable. You have a more open mind, because that pride and ego is going to get in the way, and it's going to leave you with nothing but yourself, because your spouse or significant other is going to go the other direction and leave you.
Yeah. And I think for a while, you know, right after we got married, you know, because marriage is a completely different ballgame than dating.
Absolutely.
Completely different. You know, you are now pretty much the same person. I mean, you have different personalities, but you are, you know, becoming one. So your finances, his finances, well, it's both yours now. My money isn't just my money anymore. So that's kind of, I think when we started to realize that and we started to understand, okay, things are getting a little bit hard now. Uh-huh. We need to do something about it before it goes way off into the deep end and then we can't change it and we can't fix it.
Absolutely. And we spend a lot of time arguing and tearing each other apart. And the thing was that in my mind, I was correct. And in my mind, I had ground to stand on and everything I was saying made perfect sense. It's not that I was throwing Abby under the table or didn't appreciate her or thought that she was worthless or useless in the marriage or didn't bring anything to the table. Everything that I would bring up in a conversation about finances or marriage or our future, our present situation, anything like that, I thought I had solid ground to stand on. And I still remember to this day, us sitting at Subway. I don't remember where it was at, someplace in downtown Atlanta. And we were sitting at Subway and you were sitting across from me and we had just another argument among many arguments about finances and how we're never going to get out of debt and everything like that. And when I think back on it, I completely unloaded on you and you were in tears at the end of it. And the whole time I'm doing this, I'm saying, why is she in tears? She's playing victim. She's playing innocent. This is all her fault. I'm doing everything I can. And I never stopped 1 minute. And this happens. This happens. This doesn't mean that I didn't love Abby or anything like that. In my mind, it was tough love. Mm-hmm. But when I look back at it, that was my own ego and pride refusing to listen to her calling out to me. And she had her own thoughts about it. And in that moment, she was a lot more mature than I was a lot of the time. And it just took me. I would like to say that Abby's probably more emotionally mature than I am, despite the fact that I'm older than her. And it's taken me some time to catch back up. But that's one of the great things about marriage is through Abby, I'm actually becoming more emotionally secure. And that makes me a lot more secure and present in other areas of my life.
And I think, you know, a lot of that not being emotionally secure had a lot to do with your job at the time. You know, his job before he met, he was a drill sergeant. That was his job. You know, he was a walking time bomb. So I tried my best to understand. There were times when I was like, I don't get it. What am I doing wrong? And I just kind of had to remind myself like, okay, this was his life for 3 years before he met me. This is all he knew. He didn't have that female, you know, representation in his life to like bring him back down to normal level. He was just always, you know, I'm at 100, I'm always going to be at 100 and I'm always going to be right. Yep. And that's the life of a drill sergeant. And that's what the military can do to you. So, and that doesn't just go for being a drill sergeant. That goes for all those military couples out there who may experience the same thing. Mm-hmm. That's part of what the military brings into your life.
That's what it does. And it goes back to our conversation that we had like last week, I think it was, about mental resilience. And it's funny that the whole time I'm a drill sergeant and like Abby said, I'm always right. And guess what? Even when I'm not right, I'm still right because I'm a drill sergeant. I'm in charge. I'm the dictator of this platoon. And we talked about why it is a dictatorship and the importance of it in basic combat training specifically of it being being a dictatorship versus a democracy. And I brought that same train of thought into our marriage. And that is not the place. You cannot have a dictatorship in a marriage. And you can't even have, you know, it might be slightly different for some people, but you can't even have, you know, the man is in charge all the time and things like that. One of the podcasts I listen to, my favorite podcast by far, Order of Man by Ryan Mickler. And he talks about, you know, a man protects, provides, and presides. They protect their household, they provide for their household, and they preside over their household. And while I do feel that that's true, I also think that you should, it's going to be different for everyone. It depends on the married couple, but at no point in time should the man be taking lead every single time. The man is not more dominant every single time because women have a lot to bring to the table. And if they didn't, if they didn't have everything that a man didn't have, and we didn't complement each other, we wouldn't need that. We would all be single our entire lives. And it's very important for the woman, the girlfriend, the fiance, the wife, the spouse, whatever it is. It is important for the woman to take charge in certain instances. It can't be the man 24/7 all the time.
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. So,
and that's an unpopular opinion, but it is what it is, and it needs to become more popular.
Yeah. So we just, I mean, we really had to, it was learning and growing. I mean, sometimes it felt like it was two steps forward, one step back. And sometimes it was like, oh, hey, we just took 10 steps forward and only one step back. So, you know, it was kind of, it was hit and miss. It was kind of like up until we, I think, really started paying attention to detail to each other, finding out what each other wants in life. And we had, you know, we went through a time where we were not good at communicating at first. Our communication was terrible because I was afraid to say things because, you know, I always expected the same answer. Because like we said, he, you know, he had that mentality that he was just right and that's how it was going to be. So for a while, I never brought anything up until it came to a point when it was, my pot was full. And I just, I remember this one time we had gotten into a fight and
I already know where you're going.
He had called me a name and I was like, you know what? I've had it. I walked out the door. I slammed the door and I left. I didn't tell him where I was going. I didn't text him. And he texted me about, 20, 30 minutes later and apologized. And I was like, that's all I needed. And that's all I needed because I knew that he knew he was wrong. And that was the first fight we ever had that he knew he was wrong. And that was a breakthrough for me. Because when I tell you the fights that we had had before, I constantly hit a brick wall. And that was just the breakthrough of it. That was, you know, that wall came down that day. And that's why I was so filled with emotion. But it was so important for me because he had realized, like, you guys don't understand, like, our relationship after, I want to say, like, the first few months, because we moved pretty quickly into our relationship.
And with that being said, us moving very quickly into our relationship, you have to understand that puppy love did not go its full length of time because we got married quicker than most people even date. I'm gonna be honest. We moved fast, and I don't regret moving fast, but that stage of puppy love also moved fast. Mm-hmm. And with that being said, a lot of the times when we wouldn't argue on things, one, it was partially because I was still in that drill sergeant mentality. I'm right all the time. You know, that's all there is. I'm right all the time. You are wrong all the time. But part of it was because we were still in that puppy love phase, and we didn't want to argue. We didn't want to clash. We didn't want to start that first friction.
Yeah. Yeah. Like I said, you know, when he hit that breakthrough, that was like, okay, you know, he's learning, he's changing with me, and he's learning how to, you know, listen to me. And that was kind of like, I knew right then and there, he was someone that I would marry because I knew that if this fight, and it was a bad fight, you guys. It was like we were yelling at each other, and I had slammed the door. And I knew after that fight, if we could have gotten through that fight, he was someone I could have gotten through anything with.
Yeah, that's literally the only time I've ever called you a name because I'm very anti that. And for me to get to that point, it was bad.
Yeah.
So. Now, of course, you know, I would never ever physically abuse or anything like that. There's no way.
It wasn't like that at all.
There's no way. Yeah. But
heat of the moment type of thing.
Exactly. But you know, you start saying things that you regret and you can't take back. It even takes me a long time to really call a name because I'm just not like that. And we were at that point. It was bad. It was a bad fight. Yeah. And it literally, you know, when she's talking about that 20 minutes that sat back, I kind of sat back and everything like that. And I'd be lying if I said I didn't tear up a little bit before I sent that message and everything. I knew that in my mind, I was letting my ego and I was letting my pride get in the way of my relationship at the time. And I knew that I did not want to lose Abby. And if I didn't shape up, then I was going to lose Abby. And I had no one to blame but myself. It was my own pride. It was my own ego, my own anger, my own shortcomings that kept getting in the way time and time again. And I was too weak of a man to control that. And I think a lot of times men need to control their emotions better. And I'm going to say something. I'm going to do this a lot, by the way. I'm kind of a maverick, I think, a lot of times in my life, because I say a lot of things that other people are afraid to say. Some call me ballsy. Some call me stupid. Some call me real. Some just say I tell it how it is. But as a man, if you are not an emotional man, you are wrong. Mm-hmm. And I don't care how macho and masculine or whatever the fuck you want to throw in there. I don't care. Yeah. If you are not an emotional man, guess what? You are not a man. Mm-hmm. You are still a little boy who needs guidance from an adult to find his way through life. And you know what? That's okay, because I was there at one point in time too. And if you suppress your emotions so much habitually, time and time again, like society thinks that men need to do, then you are going to become out of touch with your emotions. And one of the things like that, if someone comes up to you and says, how do you feel about this? If you're watching a YouTube video, you know, like for example, let's talk about the riots in Atlanta right now, or the riots across the country, wherever it might be. If someone says, how do you feel about that? The first thing you're going to do is immediately go to start thinking. You're going to say, I think this, that, or the third about these actions. Nobody fucking asked you, what do you think about this? They asked, how do you feel? Our natural reaction to people asking how we feel about something is to immediately revert that question to how do we think about that? And that is not the answer. That is the like smoking gun of someone who is completely out of touch with their emotions. Mm-hmm. If you're so out of your touch with your emotions that you can't tell someone how you feel without redirecting it to how you think, how well do you think that that's going to serve you in your relationship or marriage? You are literally plaguing your own marriage because you force yourself to be out of touch with your emotions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think we should take a break and come back and talk about how we can apply these five love languages into our life and why it's so important that we do. So we will be right back.
Absolutely. Stand by for a word from our sponsors, Anchor. And if you didn't know, we are still using Anchor to film this podcast. Like I said, we're never going to put any type of sponsored ad out there of just something like that's a money grab. This is literally something that we are filming all of our podcasts through so far. Cannot recommend Anchor enough, but if you just stand by, you'll hear my lovely little voice doing my sponsored ad like I'm important or something like that, like I'm a real professional. I'm not. And then we'll be right back after. So y'all stay tuned. Thank you.
Hey, guys, I want to tell you about this incredible resource called Anchor. If any of you have ever wanted to create a podcast, then Anchor is for you. It's completely free. There's creation tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. Anchor will distribute your podcast for you so it can be heard on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and many more. You can make money from your podcast with no minimum required listeners. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one simple place. Download the free Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started. One more time, download the free Anchor app in the App Store or Google Play Store, or go to anchor.fm to get started.
Yep. Welcome back, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that word from our sponsor, which was actually just a word from me talking about our sponsor, but
yeah.
In any case, I think I was spending a little bit too much time ranting there, and we really need to get on. That's something I'm really bad about. I'm really bad about ranting and rambling. And if you're kind of like me, I know I'm rambling right now. It's real quick, and then we'll get back on topic. So if you ever think about making a podcast and you're like, well, I don't really know if I can make videos, I swear I never, ever, ever thought I could make a podcast that would last over an hour or something. I really thought when I started this, I'm like, man, I'm going to be lucky if I get 10, 15 minutes out of it. Nope, yours truly can bird walk. I swear, I'm telling you guys, I can talk about nothing for like 30 minutes like I'm doing right now. So we're going to get right back on track. Don't be afraid to make that jump into podcasting if you're really wanting to do it. But we're going to get back on track, and I'm going to hand it back over to my beautiful wife, Abigail. So go ahead, Abby.
All right, so I think we should talk about why it's so important. I mean, we kind of hit on it a little bit, but I think we should talk about why it's so important that you know yours and how you can really apply that to your life.
Absolutely. So as far as why knowing your love language is important, I would actually say it's more important to know your significant other's love language than it is to know your own, because really you kind of know your own love language. You just don't know how Dr. Chapman titles it.
Yeah.
So if you, for example, if you like getting compliments from your significant other, if you like, hey, you know, you look really good today. You look really beautiful. You know, I love your hair like that. Your words of affirmation. Mm-hmm. Quality time is if you enjoy doing things together with your significant other, or partaking in something that you guys do together, that you spend your undivided that you give your undivided attention to each other. You know, there's not cell phones being used 24/7. That's quality time. Receiving gifts. You know, if your significant other loves to get roses, that just makes their day. If they love to get tiny little handmade things that you make and things like that, that is receiving gifts. Acts of service would be like Abby loves when I do a chore or when I have dinner cooked or something like that. That is acts of service. And physical touch can be something as simple as you know, brushing against me when we're cooking together, you know, just brushing against me on your way to get something out of the dishwasher or holding my hand in public. Yeah. That's physical touch.
And I will say, once we learned what our love language was, I feel like that has really helped. Like when we fight, because it's not like we're not a normal couple. We still fight, but we're a lot more mature about it now. Mm-hmm. And I think the reason why we're so mature about it is because we know each other's love language. We know how to approach it now. We know, okay, so just like I was in the shower and there was a bug in the shower today, and I called Cody in to, you know, come kill it, and he got a little bit of attitude with me, and then I got an attitude back, and I was in the shower thinking about it, and I was like, I shouldn't have cursed at him. I was just really irritated because I just needed him to kill this one bug so I could enjoy my shower.
And I throw a bug. And she's literally in the shower, and I walk in and throw bug spray at her and walk out because I'm busy doing my own thing. I'm like, if she has me kill one more freaking bug and stuff like that. But but as she's regretting it in the shower, I'm in the office, and I'm like, man, you know what? And this was after the fact, you know, I knew she already killed the bug. So I hear her, you know, taking her shower again and everything. And I'm like, man, I really should have helped her out with that. And I kind of felt bad.
And it's so funny because that was an act of service for me. And then words of affirmation, you know, I cursed at him. So that was the complete opposite. So when you think about it, you kind of know how to approach each other afterward and, you know, realize, okay, I did that wrong and I was wrong for it. So that's how, and we both realize that. So that's just a simple way if you can kind of understand and implement that into your life. Even when you do have arguments, it just makes it a lot easier to talk about it,
mm-hmm.
to communicate and get through it.
And I think it's important to, I know a lot of people call it fighting and fights and stuff like that. It's not a fight. It's not a fight.
No,
it's not fighting. I would even say, you know, it's a disagreement. Mm-hmm. Or like you said, an argument or something like that. It's a disagreement is probably the best way to put that. And if you have a mature couple, it's a disagreement and you guys reach a mutual conclusion together to find a solution. From a disagreement, if you have people that just take it the next level, now it's an argument. And then if they take it beyond that, now it's a full-blown fight. A very mature couple is going to make sure it stays a disagreement and doesn't progress anything further than a conclusion. Because that's what we do as a, you know, we're a fairly mature couple. You know, mm-hmm. We do a lot. We take a lot of initiative to better ourselves.
It's a lot of work, guys. Marriage is hard. That's one of the things that, you know, before I got married, I wish someone would have told us about this, about the love languages. Mm-hmm. Because like something like before we would have known like our love languages, something like that probably would have pissed me off for a couple hours. And mm-hmm. I think knowing how to interact with each other and how mm-hmm. something so simple like that can completely throw off someone's day.
Mm-hmm.
It just gives you a perspective. It really, really does.
It does. And if you take like little bickering and things like Abby called it, you know, bickering and things like that of maybe a younger couple or a married couple that's been together for 20 years that to be honest, has lost their love for each other. They will take the smallest little things and they will just, you know what? I'm pissed off at you and I'm going to be pissed off all day and I'm going to throw shade your way and I'm going to act like I'm 16, a sophomore in high school with my maturity level because now you've lost your emotional intelligence. You haven't kept up with it. It's something that requires upkeep every single day.
Work.
And it requires work. And so absolutely many people get married before they're ready. And before they're young. And you know what? Me and Abby probably got married. We probably moved a little bit too fast. But it's okay because we made the commitment to each other. And those vows are not just something that, you know, oh, hey, yeah, I vowed to do this. I vowed to do that. I vowed to do that. No. No, those are lifelong commitments that we will uphold for the rest of our life. Mm-hmm. And it's important for us to work hard to uphold those vows and to always be there for each other every single day. And you know what? If we're not, then we're not truly there for each other and we don't, you know, really love each other and stuff like that, but we do. And that's one thing that separates a lot of people over and over again. You have these people that get married 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times. Well, you know what? It's never going to work for you. I don't care if you're on marriage number 28. It's never going to work because you never learned your lesson from marriage number 1. You never learned how to communicate. Yeah. You never learned the love languages and things like
that.
You
got to be able to grow. And it's a constant job. It does not stop. It does not stop when you're tired. It does not stop when you're having a good day, when you're having a bad day. You're constantly growing from it. And you're constantly. That's if you're willing to. That's like we said, that's if you are emotionally mature for that. And mm-hmm. you see a lot of, I mean, we're both fairly young and we got married fairly young, but we are very much emotionally mature. And honestly, I want to say that has a lot to do with being in the military and absolutely. Moving out early. You know, I moved out when I was really young from my parents' house and I was able to grow a little bit. And it's just having that stability and being able to understand, okay, like this is hard. It is not easy. I would say too, God has a lot to do with that. Mm-hmm. Because before we got married and even a little bit after we got married, we didn't really bring God into our life. Mm-hmm. And up until recently, you know, I had a breakthrough and I was crying and, you know, telling Cody, I was like, I just don't feel like anybody is listening to me right now. And at one point, I didn't even feel like God was listening to me. You know, that we were just going through a lot of stuff personally with trying to have a baby and stuff like that. And, you know, anxiety and everything that's going on in the world. And so when he came back into the picture, things started to get tremendously better. And I don't know if you're religious or not. That's your own, you know, your own personal thing. But for me now, you know, we do our devotionals every day, at least on the days that we remember to, because some days we come home, we're just so tired, we go straight to bed. Yep. We pray every single day together. We hold hands and we pray together. And that is something that has been, honestly, a lift off of my shoulders. Mm-hmm. It has really, really just taken a bunch of bricks off my shoulders. You know what, God, this is your plan and you're doing what you need to do. So
exactly. And that makes us together as a married couple, that makes us more spiritually present in our lives. And, you know, the thing is we are unafraid to put ourselves out there as Christians. If you have an issue with us being Christians, I don't know what to tell you. I don't care. I really don't. If you have an issue with me holding with us as a married couple, holding traditional Christian values, we do not care. We support our own freedoms to worship whoever we want in this country. And we support you to do the same.
Yeah.
If you are a Muslim, guess what? We don't care. That's great. That's awesome. You're utilizing your freedom of religion to be a Buddhist or a Hindu or a Muslim or whatever it is you are, an atheist or something like that. It does not matter. What matters is that you have some source of positive spiritual energy that gives you motivation in your life. Ours happens to be Christianity. If you think that the tenets of being a Muslim, the tenets of Islam, is what really, or the benevolence of Buddhism is what really makes you spiritually present, then that's A-okay. That is your form of spiritual presence. But that's one thing that we really want to get across in this podcast. We haven't talked about the spiritual aspect as much. We will in later podcasts, but that's just really how we feel about that. And for us, even though the five love languages doesn't go into the spiritual aspect, we are going to talk about that. We're going to talk about the five love languages too. But for us, God is the cornerstone, the foundation, whatever you want to call it, of our marriage. Without God, there is no husband, wife. There is no became one flesh. There's nothing.
Yeah, I sent a text message to Cody the other day. I was having a really bad day at work, and I was just like, you know what? I just need to come home and pray with you. And I sent a picture of, well, I tried to type it because it was over text message, but it was a triangle. And in the left-hand corner, it was Cody's name. In the right-hand corner, it was my name. And at the very top of that triangle, it was God. You can't have one without the other.
It was super cute.
Yeah. So yeah, really, with that being said, though, I do want to, for the people out there who want to know what else they can do to inspire them
and this, religiously. This we're going off track a little bit from the five love languages, because this is still something that will mm-hmm. strengthen your marriage. This is specifically for Christian couples, but yeah. You know, if you have a different religion, you know, it's too easy to go to the bookstore and find something similar that matches your specific religion. But for us, it's Christianity. Go ahead, Abby.
So this is called Celebrate Your Marriage. It's 365 days of daily devotionals for busy couples. Literally what we do, it's a little tiny book. It's really cute.
And we got it from Barnes & Noble.
Yeah, we got it from Barnes & Noble. I don't remember how much it was. It was probably like $12-something.
Yeah, it was fairly cheap.
And we just, it's a little, it's got one page for every day of the year. And it's probably about a paragraph that you read, and it mm-hmm. comes along with a Bible quote. So what we usually do is at night, in the morning, whenever we have some free time, we'll read the Bible quote, get our Bible out, highlight it, and then watch a video on it and mm-hmm. Kind of interpret that from, you know, a different angle. But we love it. We do it every day. We try to. Mm-hmm.
So, for example, for today, it talks about something in real life, like recall funny moments, and it just kind of talks, it inspires conversation between between the couple. And we just kind of talked about an event or something, a memory that we have in our life that we share together that no one else shares with us, and it brings us closer. And that, and also it integrates a biblical quote in there. For today, for June 6th, it's Proverbs 4:23. The NIV version says, above all else, guard your heart, for it is the wellspring of life. And what we do from there is we communicate together, you know, what do you think that this Bible verse means? And how do you think we apply this to our lives? And then we'll go on YouTube or wherever we find, normally it's YouTube, and we'll find a really good video of maybe a pastor's take on it. And we'll kind of compare it to the pastor, and we'll learn something. Every single time we will learn something.
Yeah. In addition to that, we also have a question of the day for couples. It's a 3-year journal to capture your conversations, pretty much. Mm-hmm. So,
and this one is non-religious.
Yeah, well, it's got it's got a couple Bible quotes at the bottom, but it's really meant for you to write down your ideas. Mm-hmm. So if you look on today's that we did, let me go ahead and find it.
June 6th. D-Day today, so make sure you pay your respects to those that have come before us on D-Day.
Yeah, so for June 6th, it says, it's summer blockbuster time. What has been your favorite movie so far this year? For me, it was Hacksaw Ridge. For Cody, it was Toy Story 4. He may or may not have cried with that movie.
We're not going to talk about it.
You can't preach about being an emotional man and not say your truths, okay? And then at the bottom, it's just got a little Bible quote. But what's cool about this is it's got 3 years worth. So you go through it two more times after the year to kind of compare and see how you've grown and how your conversations have grown. It's really cool. I really like it. And it's really fun. So
that's great.
Yeah.
So now that our little, religious spill, which is very important to us. Like I said, it's our foundation for our relationship. For us, it's even more important than the five love languages. We could have the five love languages all day, but without God, our marriage is destined to fail. Mm-hmm. That's just our philosophy on our personal marriage. But back to the five love languages for everyone else that's listening that is not necessarily a Christian. Back on the five love languages, we were talking earlier about how each love language could be its own language. And then further from that, each language can have different dialects of it. So the example I used earlier is if you take the English language, the different dialects of the English language could be from Texas, New Jersey, Minnesota, Michigan, you know, up north and stuff like that. Or it could even be like British English, where they go around talking like this, eh? No, that's Canadian, but whatever. Anyways, words of affirmation. We're going to start with that love language.
Wait, if you're British or Canadian, I'm sorry, he just butchered your accent.
It'll be okay. We won that war.
You tried.
I'm kidding. Same, I say that so, to everything.
Yeah.
I'm terrible sometimes.
Okay, let's get to it.
Okay, so words of affirmation. So with words of affirmation, that's the love language itself, words of affirmation. So the dialects of it are, for example, this is what Dr. Chapman brings up in particular, encouraging words, kind words, and humble words. So if you're talking about those differently, so say, you know, Abby has something coming up at work and she's really nervous about it, or maybe you know, she wants to start a new path in life. She wants to start something new. And it's important for the spouse, the significant other, whatever it may be, it's very important for us to have encouraging words that encourage her to take that step. Or maybe she has a hidden talent that the world doesn't really know about because she exposed that talent at one point in time. Maybe she drew, you know, when she was growing up, and she wanted to be an artist, and she submitted her artwork to an art gallery, and the art gallery was like, no, and she was rejected. And now, you know, she just kind of doesn't really do much at all. And she scribbles and doodles every now and again. And then one day I take a look at it, and, you know, I go into the room, and I'm like, hey, you know, Abby, this is really, really great. You know, this is a really great drawing. I think you should do something more with this rather than just doodle as a hobby. So that is encouraging words. It's encouraging your significant other to blaze their own path or to do better at whatever it might be. There's so many different instances you can do that. And then kind words. So kind words is I'm going to say kind words need to be used mostly during a disagreement. It is the ability to have a disagreement in a mature manner. It is the anti-Facebook. It is not social media. Social media, the issue with social media is, one, there hasn't been enough people in the world that's been punched straight in the face before and they've got attitude. And second, they think there's no repercussions because they're keyboard warriors and are hiding behind their cell phone screens. Mm-hmm. That stuff doesn't work in real life. It doesn't. If you talk to me in a certain manner in real life, there's a good chance you're going to get clocked.
Well,
and another thing, that's just how it works in real life. Do not be one of those people that do that. Please, this is so off topic. Please don't do that. And more important in your marriage and your relationship and things like that, it's important to have kind words when you have a disagreement. It is important to listen. It's more important to listen than say something. You already know how each other feels. It's more important to see why they feel that manner so you can meet in the middle and find that compromise. Mm-hmm. And you do that in a kind manner. You don't do that by undermining them the entire conversation because they're not going to feel valued or respected within the relationship. And then the last one is humble words. So an example of humble words, let's say that I cook dinner the most of the time in the house and Abby absolutely loves when I cook spaghetti. That's her favorite meal for me is spaghetti. So it would be an example of humble words with her asking me politely. And some might argue that this is kind words. And I guess I could argue that it's kind of kind words too, but the way Dr. Chapman lays it out in his book, this is humble words, is her asking me politely, hey, you know, that spaghetti you cook is really good. You know, like kind of dropping some hints in there saying, you know, hey, would you mind cooking spaghetti this week? Rather than in a negative way saying, you know, why don't you ever cook anything good around here? Hey, why is every time you cook something, it turns out bad or something like that? Instead of negatively talking, bringing up all the negatives that I do, it's reinforcing a positive, and then I will respond to that in a positive manner. If you want spaghetti, say you love my spaghetti, there's a bigger chance and I'm probably going to make you spaghetti this week. That's an example of Dr. Chapman's humble words. You have anything to say about the words of affirmation in general?
No, I just think that the listening aspect is really, really important. That was something we had.
Absolutely. And we'll go into that further in quality time as well, because that goes big into listening. So we'll go ahead and we'll actually make that jump into quality time. So the next love language is quality time. And the dialects that of Dr. Chapman's dialects are focused attention, quality conversation, quality activities, and learning to talk. Mm-hmm. So focused attention, the biggest issue with couples with focused attention nowadays is they think that they have to be constantly looking at their phone or watching TV. They constantly have to be distracted by some form of technology. And that needs to be eliminated from time to time in a relationship, mm-hmm. especially on date night or something like that. That's actually a really good instance, is during a date night. If you're on a date with your wife or anything like that, put the phone away, turn it on silent, put the phone in your pocket, and just for 30 minutes or an hour or whatever it is, actually act like you really care about your husband or wife. That doesn't mean, you know, oh, well, she knows I love her because I took her out and gave her food and I did this and I did that. That's cool. But you know what? Anyone in the world can do that. What's really important is looking her directly in the eyes and making eye contact and giving her your undivided attention so she knows that you have this time that you have that you can never get back again. And you chose to invest it into her or vice versa.
And by the way, if you're married, yes, you should still be dating your spouse.
Absolutely.
I've heard so many people ask me that because I actually just told one of my coworkers the other day that, hey, I was going on a date. He's like, you're going on a date with who? I was like, well, my husband. I'm still married. I can still date my husband. And that's very crucial in a relationship. So I just wanted to point that out as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, all these people that are like, one of my pet peeves is people who are like, oh, you know, this, that. He's like, well, expect that to go away as soon as you get married. You're not getting that anymore. No, actually, I will, because I have a healthy relationship with my wife. Mm-hmm. And we know each other very well. I'm sorry that you say that, oh, as soon as you get married, don't expect X, Y, and Z anymore, or don't expect this to happen, or expect to lose this, or expect to lose that. You know what? That specific person is bitter and has no ground to stand on in relation to marriage at all. And you know what? The thing that they've been married, they think they're marriage experts. But you know what? Their marriage failed. They have no ground to stand on. They are the worst people to talk to. I would rather take advice from a single person than a person from a failed marriage about marriage. Because the thing that I know, the only thing I would listen to from a person with a failed marriage is I would listen to what they say and I would do the exact opposite. Because I know that what they did definitely didn't work for them. And I would just much rather take advice from a single person about marriage than a person with a failed marriage. And I think that so many people put so much relevance and weight on a person that's been on their third, fourth, or fifth marriage or something like that. And they're like, oh, they're marriage experts. No, they're not. They're marriage failures. Mm-hmm. You know, if you have an NBA player who shoots free throws and they miss every single time they make a free throw, why would you take their advice on a free throw? That's stupid. That is ignorant. That is ridiculous. So why would you take the advice of a person from a failed marriage or multiple failed marriages as scripture as far as marriage goes? No, that makes them absolute zero relevance in regards to marriage.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that kind of leads into how it's going to benefit a marriage. So trust and communication, first and foremost. You don't have trust and you don't have communication, I'm sorry, but it's just not going to work.
Yeah,
those are two things that you absolutely need.
They're so simple, but mm-hmm. they take constant effort every single day. So easy to learn, hard to master.
Yeah. Communication. What we do is we usually have a weekly marriage meeting.
Absolutely.
Which has really helped. lately. So we just finished reading the Five Love Languages book. So what we're going to do is I'm going to write a list of 10 things that I would really, really appreciate if Cody did for me this week.
Because remember, she's acts of service.
Yes. And then vice versa, he's going to write a list of about 10 things that he would appreciate from me. Also into that, we also do like talk about finances. We budget. We talk about God. Where can we improve from this week into next week? So I think that's really a key role in a healthy marriage also.
Not to mention planning that date night, because like we said, you should always be dating your spouse. Just because you married them does not mean you won. You win the battle of love every single day. You show them and prove your love to them every single day. For those of you that are not still dating your spouses, if you have a bad or unhealthy marriage, that is probably why.
Mm-hmm.
You somewhere along the way, you have lost your love for each other, and you need to reclaim that love. And Five Love Languages is an excellent starting point to reclaiming your love and reclaiming your marriage.
Yeah, and that kind of leads into filling up each other's love tanks. You know, we have a certain amount of love that we need to have a day to feel like we can keep going.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you fill those love tanks up with knowing each other's love languages.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So with the love tank, it's really, if you think of it like a gas tank, it's the same thing. It is, if your vehicle is full of gas, it's going to keep going, obviously. If it doesn't have any gas in it, you know, it's not going to go. So the same thing, the love tank. If your love tank is full of love, then the marriage, the relationship, whatever it is going to keep going strong if both parties have a full love tank. However, if both love tanks are empty, or even one of them is empty, you will notice. It's going to cause arguments. It's going to cause separation between the two. And we're going to talk a little bit more about how to fill your significant other's love tank. So you fill your significant other's love tank by consistently, and that's the key word, consistently. That's the key word with anything in life. As far as eating right, exercising right, getting to where you want to be in life is done through consistency.
Mm-hmm.
So consistently, if you got to put it in your calendar, put it in your calendar, because that's exactly what I do. Like, Abby's going to write me a list of things that she would really appreciate on a week-to-week basis, and I make sure to add that into my calendar. I add that into my calendar not because I'm jumping for joy to do the dishes. Oh, my God, I love doing dishes. It's my favorite thing. No, I hate doing dishes. But you know what? I do it because I love her. I don't do it out of fear, because she scares me. I'm afraid of what retribution I have to endure if I don't do the dishes. I don't do it because she coerces me. She's, hey, tis for tat. Like, no, I don't do that. I do that because I genuinely love my wife. I want her to know that I love her, and showing her that I love her by my preferred method is simply not going to work. And that's something that you guys don't understand. You think, hey, I love my husband, I love my wife, and I'm going to show them this way. Well, that's fantastic, but it does not resonate with them the same way it resonates with you if they have a different love language.
Mm-hmm.
I love physical touch. So if I hold Abby and I cuddle with Abby and I hold her close to me all night, is she going to appreciate it? Yes, she will. But it does not mean anywhere near as much to her as I think it does, because we are different. We have different love languages. However, if I want her to feel that same love as I feel from cuddling or holding hands or a hug or a kiss, I do that by doing dishes. And you know what? I have to become fluent in her love language. Now, I'm not just fluent in physical touch or Russian, as we were using earlier. It is now my job, it's my mission, because I love my wife, to learn French, to learn acts of service, to learn her love language. And I do that through consistency. I can't just do, hey, I'm going to work on French once a week, and I hope to God the other 6 days I'm going to remember. No, you're not going to do that.
You have to do it every single freaking day. It is a promise that you made to each other. It's a vow that you made on your wedding day that you were going to be there through them, through everything. Mm-hmm. And it is your job to do that every single day. A vow is not something you just do once and then forget about. You do it every single day. And I think that so many people go into marriage and they think it's just a game. It's cool. It's this, it's that. It's a Facebook status. It's awesome. I'm going to get praise. I'm going to get that. No, it's something. It's a war. It's a war every single day. And you have to be there for each other. You are the only teammates that you guys have. That is it.
It's a war.
It's a war. It's a war against every single thing. But it's a war against everything coming at you. It's you're taking rounds from finances coming in. You're taking rounds from, hey, this person hit you up on Facebook. That person hit you up on Facebook. You're taking in rounds from so many different places. There's so many things that would love to tear you apart every single day, but you refuse to let it happen. You are there for each other consistently, time and time again, every single day. And if you mess up, that's okay. You have to be able to forgive each other. Forgiveness is a sign of love. Mercy is a sign of love. For example, going back to the Christian perspective, you know, God has mercy on us. He gave his one and only son, Jesus Christ, to save us from our sins. That is mercy. So who are we, especially as Christians, who are we to not forgive our significant others for their trespasses, but at the same time expect God to forgive us? If God, the creator of us, forgave us for our sins, who are we as mere mortals to not forgive our wife or our husband for their sins? Do we as suddenly have so much pride and ego that we think that we're better than God? Absolutely not. So time and time again, you have to stick together. You have to maintain your vows. You have to have the dedication to each other and consistency to meet your spouse in their love language to show them that you care.
Yeah. And, you know, going back to filling up each other's love tank, guess what? When my love tank is full, I can fill up his love tank. So it's vice versa. It's, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I know we kind of went way off course with that.
Just remember, we're military, so that's where the war metaphor came in. Yeah. He made it sound a little bit dramatic, but just remember.
But it's true, and yeah, sometimes I go off on ramps. I'm over here knife handing this microphone that we have. It's just the way I am. I'm sorry, guys. The quality time aspect that we got, because we already talked about words of affirmation, the encouraging words, kind words versus humble words. Quality time, we talked about focused attention, quality conversation, quality activities, and learning to talk. The most important thing for you guys to remember, if your significant other is big on quality time, and it doesn't really sound this way, but the main takeaways that you have to remember, if your husband or wife or girlfriend, boyfriend, fiance, whatever it is, their love language is quality time. You need to learn how to set time aside for your significant other every single day. And I do mean every single day. You need to have a dedicated time where all technology is removed from the immediate area, where you can sit and look each other directly in the eyes and have a good quality productive conversation. How was your day? How was your day? You know, hey, these are the things that happened today. Talk about your days. And more importantly, you need to know how to listen. You need to know how to listen. And listening is something that a lot of people are terrible about. Listening is something that a lot of people don't do. They always want to put their thought out there and make it immediately relevant, things like that. And that's one big issue that I did as well. And I learned through emotional maturity and becoming a better husband and a lot of self-exploration and things like that, I learned that sometimes when Abby rants about work or rants about this, that, or the third, she doesn't always want a solution. And my idea and my train of thought, I'm like, I always have to provide a solution to everything. I have to provide a plan of action. It's kind of why I call this podcast Plan of Action, because it's a huge thing in our lives. And sometimes your significant other just wants to vent. They just want someone to vent to. They want someone to talk to. They want someone to confide in. They don't always want answers.
Yeah. Sometimes, you know, going back is sometimes all they want is just a little sympathy. They want to know that you feel for them. You feel their struggles and you understand that, you know, this person is doing something they don't want to do, but they're doing it for you. Mm-hmm. So sometimes that's all they want to know.
Absolutely. So moving on from that, like I said, if you're a significant other's quality time, learn how to put the social media away, learn how to put the phone down, TV off, music off, and learn how to listen. Next thing, receiving gifts. If your significant other's, their love language is receiving gifts. And it doesn't always have to be this big, extravagant thing. You know, the two main gifts is, well, I guess you could say three main gifts. It can be something simple. Like for example, Abby loves white roses. White roses are not that expensive. And a normal person, you bring home a white rose and they're like, oh, that's awesome. It's super pretty. And then they forget about it. Abby's like on her knees in tears. Oh my gosh, I cannot believe I got a white rose.
And it's just that aspect of you thought of me.
Exactly.
The same thing goes for you. You know, if I'm at the store and I see something, I'm like, oh my God, Cody would love that. And I'll bring it home and he's super appreciative. You know, and it's simple things in your everyday life. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't have to be, you don't have to go out and buy something. It can be
something
yourself. The gift can be you. If you are at work all the time or, you know, you're off doing something all the time and you're super busy, that gift can be as simple as your time.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I would venture to say that that's the most important one, but that's not my primary love language. And you guys, a lot of you guys are like, oh my God, that's some of me. And that's some of me. And that's some of me. Understand that you have a primary love language and that you will have a little bit of every love language in there. Like just because I'm physical touch doesn't mean that I don't like compliments. It's not like Abby's like, hey, you look handsome today. I'm like, shut up. No, I don't. Just hold my hand. Like, no, we're not these emotionless robots. Like, you're going to have, you know, you're gonna enjoy and be a part of all the five love languages. But there's just one dominant one that stands above the rest. And that's important to know. And so like Abby said, probably the most important one I would think is the gift of yourself. Because if you think the one thing in life that we literally cannot ever get back ever is your time. Mm-hmm. We don't have time travel. Time, giving someone your time is the most precious thing that you can do for them. And a lot of times when people have receiving gifts as their love language, any small little thing that makes that lets them know that you thought of them at some point in time during that day or physically being present yourself. And the next one is Abby's acts of service. That's her primary love language. And there's two different types. Oh, hold on, wait. I'm thinking of physical touch. Acts of service. Do you want to talk about acts of service one more time?
Yeah, so I know we briefly kind of touched on it, but really acts of service for me is just, I know that I can get really stressed out, especially, you know, having a house. You know, we just moved into a house. It's a lot of work, you know.
Especially with our two dogs.
Yeah, I work 10-hour days at my job. So coming home and him having, you know, cleaned the house, if he got home before me, that makes me so happy. I could have the crappiest day at work, and if I come home and I have a clean house to come home to or dinner to come home to, that makes me incredibly happy, and it will just brighten my day for the rest of the night.
And you'll notice it, guys. You'll notice it. If you are speaking your significant other's love language, you will notice them absolutely light up the room. Their entire personality will change. They'll be so much happier. They will even be more productive at work and things like that because you're going to have more motivation. They're going to be happier in life and things like that. And with that being said, if you truly love your significant other and your spouse, would you not want to do every single thing possible to get them ahead and give them that motivation, give them that boost in life? Because that's mutually beneficial as well. That can help you out. But with that being said, it's something as simple and yet so complex as learning their love language. Mm-hmm. And then the last one we're going to talk about is physical touch. And that one's my personal one. This kind of sounds weird. Explicit and full attention is one, and implicit and only a moment is another one. Now, when I say explicit, I guess it really could be explicit. Some guys, the dialect of their physical touch love language actually is sexual. And there's a lot of men who immediately think, oh, hey, you know, I'm physical touch because sex, 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 because that's what a lot of guys think about. And the thing is that physical touch, that is just one dialect. Physical touch itself is actually non-sexual. Sexual is just one dialect of it. But that's not necessarily what explicit means. Explicit and full attention is, you could think of it as something as a back massage, for example. That means that you know, if Abby gives me a back massage when we're watching TV or something like that, that requires her full attention. She has to really focus on giving me a back massage. And that is just one dialect. And then another dialect is implicit and only a moment. And that's more my dialect. And implicit and only a moment is something that, and Abby's lucky because she, like, my physical touch love language and the dialect implicit and only a moment is probably the absolute easiest love language to pick up on. Whereas Abby's acts of service is like one of the hardest ones to pick up on and learn and stuff like that. But implicit and only a moment is something, as I said earlier, as simple as, hey, I'm cooking dinner. And as she crosses me, she just kind of rubs her hand down my back as she's moving. Or something like, you know, if we're walking around in the mall together or in Target or Walmart, or wherever we're at, she's holding my hand. Like, it's something that is so simple that it requires like almost no effort. Mm-hmm. And what's crazy is most people, I would say 4 out of 5 people, according to the 5 love languages, 4 out of 5 people would say, you know what, I don't really care if you hold my hand. I don't care if you rub on me as you're going, you know, past the oven. But for me, that makes my entire world. And it's crazy because that is the way that we're hardwired, and that's the way that we think. And it's crazy that this stuff is so powerful. And it's important that you guys know the power of the 5 love languages instead of just hearing immediately about love and just, oh, you know, I don't have time for this. I don't want to do this. You know, I'm a manly man. I'm too macho for this. No, you're not. You're not. And I think that pretty much covers everything we have.
Yeah. I just wanted to say, go check out the book, The 5 Love Languages, by Gary Chapman. Really, we kind of have to dedicate the most of this podcast to him, because this is all his knowledge, his career. This is what he has focused his career on. And when I tell you, it is accurate. When you read this book, you will read certain scenarios and you will be, oh my God, that is us. And it's super cheap. We got it for $8, I think. At
Hobby Lobby?
Yeah, Hobby Lobby. I wouldn't recommend going to like Target or Barnes & Noble to get it, because it was, I think it was like almost $20.
Yeah, it was a lot more expensive. Of course, you can always go on Amazon or something like that. It's called The 5 Love Languages, The Secret to Love That Lasts. But if you just go to Google and type in The 5 Love Languages, literally just The 5 Love Languages, it's going to bring you to the website and the book
also,
and everything.
Yeah. Also, the website has a study guide that you can actually print out. You don't have to buy it or anything. It's a free printable. It's got a study guide. And I'm almost 100% sure that all of his books have a study guide with it.
Mm-hmm.
You can print it out, you know, take notes as you're going. I would personally recommend reading it with your spouse. That's the best decision that we made when going into this book. We were going to read it separately, but then we're like, you know what? It has, you know, at the end of each chapter, it's got a work page that you can walk through everything that you've learned. And it's just, it's a great book.
And
it
let's not forget that Dr. Chapman also has a specific 5 love languages book, specially fine-tuned and catered towards military couples as well.
Yeah.
And it, you know, you can read the 5 love languages, or if you want to read the military edition one, from my understanding, all he's doing is taking the love languages and finding a way to apply those within a military relationship or marriage in instances where, you know, maybe they're deployed for a year at a time and things like that, keeping the love going and things like that. And another thing that I think is incredibly important, if we have any parents that's listening on this podcast, or you know what, before we even get into that, obviously the 5 love languages is for people such as married couples and dating and things like that. But they have a 5 love languages quiz for singles to help you realize what your love language is and what you bring to the table. So hopefully you have an understanding significant other whenever that time happens, mm-hmm. and you guys can communicate about this. But, and of course, the quiz for couples, which is what we took initially to figure out what our love language is. But if there are any parents out there, one thing that you guys have to realize is that equally as important as knowing the love language of your spouse is also knowing the love language of your children. Because if you know the love language of your children and you can better connect with your spouse and you have a much stronger relationship and the love between you guys and the bond is so much stronger by the daily grind of practicing the love languages and learning to speak it fluently with one another is your children's. Because that's going to help you, especially through those turbulent teenage years where they're getting unruly and things like that. That could make or break a teenager's life, is to know that they have parents that really, truly love them and care about them. And you're going to go back and you're going to have parents that are going to say, well, you know, I don't know how he got into drugs. I don't know how he did that. I don't know why he's in juvenile detention center, because, you know, I showed him that I loved him and I did this, that, and the third. But you know what? The same thing goes back. That child of yours might not have felt that love because they spoke a different love language. So take every single lesson that we have talked about in this podcast and apply that same situation to your child. And that is exactly why it is that equally important to know your child's love language. And you know what? On 5lovelanguages.com by Dr. Gary Chapman, there's a quiz for your children to take or your teenagers to take. And we highly recommend that if you guys are parents.
There's also books that go with those quizzes as well, specifically mm-hmm. for your children to read and specifically for you as a parent to read.
Mm-hmm. And with that, I think we're probably at like an hour and a half now. So I think it's time to, I think we're done. I think it's pretty much time to call it quits.
We're wrapping it up.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up before I start rambling again. Yeah, we have a date night tonight with some coworkers and everything like that. So,
yeah. But all right. Well, thank you guys for listening, and we will see you next time. Make sure to stay tuned on the Facebook page, Plan of Action Podcast. We post on there fairly often about the episodes coming up and what's going on. So make sure to tune in for that. We also have an Instagram at Plan of Action Podcast. Pretty much the same information that goes out on Facebook. So, and we are still working on a website.
Yep. So with that being said, we're going to go ahead and wrap this up. So as always, you guys stay safe, stay blessed, and stay ready. Plan of Action Podcast out.